Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Dr. History, good morning.
Good morning, Zeb.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. Doing great.
You got some thank yous?
I do. I want to say hi to Jay over in the Twin Cities. Now, when I say Twin Cities, I'm thinking
Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Isn't there some Twin Cities over in Washington, too?
Tri-Cities.
Okay, so Twin Cities. Anyway, he has a master's in history, and he listens to our show, and he likes the things we talk about, some things he's never heard, which we hope are true.
That's really true on this program. There's some things you ain't never heard.
But anyway, he had some suggestions for a show that I'm going to check into and do a little research and possibly do a show on one of the things that he suggested.
Okay.
So last week we talked about Doc Zoll.
I remember that. Yeah.
And he was the buffalo hunter.
Yep.
Today we're going to talk about Doc Crumbine.
Well, we're going to stay with the docs.
We're going to stay with the doc, but this is a different kind of doc.
Okay, you're right. Okay, go for it.
So the words, quote, "Don't spit on the sidewalk," is inscribed on the face of a sidewalk paving brick.
I'm going to have you back that microphone
back
up just
that?
A little bit more.
How's that?
That's better.
Okay. So the words "don't spit on the sidewalk" are inscribed on the face of a sidewalk paving brick, and it's a living memorial to a country doctor who walked the streets of Dodge City with Bat Masterson, and he had a six-shooter slung at his side.
And it was "don't spit on the sidewalk."
And you'll see what I mean here.
I got to hear this.
We'll get to it. So Samuel J. Crumbine was born in a log cabin in Pennsylvania in 1862, and he was born a month after his dad actually died in a Confederate prison during the war there. But while watching a local pharmacist mix prescriptions, Crumbine decided to become a doctor. Now, he saved enough money to enroll at the Cincinnati College of Medicine and Surgery, but he had to support himself by circulating handbills advertising Piso's Consumption Cure.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk more about that. He managed only 1 year in medical school, which was not unusual. But so he headed west. He found a job in a pharmacy in Spearville, Kansas, which is only 18 miles from rip-roaring Dodge City. Have you been to Spearville?
I've been to Dodge City.
Okay. So this is just a few miles out of there.
But Dodge City is a fun town.
Yeah. Well, it was. We'll talk about that a little. But the town had no resident doctor, so Crumbine filled the gap. And he soon started taking calls from Dodge City. And in 1885, Dodge City was considered by some to be the roughest town in the West.
Yeah.
A Chicago newspaper said, quote, "There is no law west of Chicago and no God west of Dodge City."
What year was it in its biggest prominence? Do you remember?
We're talking 1885 right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how many years it was kind of.
Didn't the cattle industry really start to make Dodge prominent probably about 1876?
Let me show you a picture here, Zeb.
Yeah.
Now, this is a picture of Dodge City back in.
Oh, there's the Long Branch. There's Miss Kitty right there with Matt Dillon.
And there's a dog.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's kind of a fun old picture that shows the general store and stuff like that. But anyway, so after 3 years of homespun medical practice, Crumbine returned to Cincinnati for some additional training.
Uh-huh.
He graduated at the top of his class. At the same time, he met a gal by the name of Catherine, and they got married, and they returned to Dodge. Now, Dodge sprawled all over the Kansas River bottom, and the business street, referred to as Front Street, was divided down the center by railroad tracks. And that picture I just showed you is a picture of Front Street.
So that would be right across from Marshall Dillon's office.
Yes, exactly. You've been there, and you were probably there in 1885.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Dr. Crumbine's first outside call set the pace for his future work. A cowhand summoned the doctor to the aid of his boss, and this was like 35 miles from town, and he had broken his leg. Well, Crumbine went out there, and he set the leg. The doctor was then held at gunpoint until the next day because the rancher wanted to be sure there were no complications to set in.
Oh, my.
Later on, the rancher sent a generous payment in gold to make up for the doctor's discomfort.
I see.
And usually, however, you know, payment came in chicken eggs, meat, or farm produce, anything that might be in season.
So this Dr. Crumbine was the same as what was portrayed on the TV show Gunsmoke with Doc Adams.
Somewhat, yeah.
Yeah. But, do you remember Doc Adams' first name?
I do not.
Galen.
Galen. Okay. Yeah. I would never guess that. Well, anyway, Crumbine, he gained self-confidence, and some people considered him a little bit aggressive. He dressed in a Prince Albert coat and a top hat, a plug hat, they called it, which all good doctors wore. And with a six-gun at his side, he made regular visits to this place I showed you, Front Street, to treat emergency cases. Well, the doctor had no qualms in telling off his patients, as well as those involved, about the error of their ways. Well, the residents, both good and bad.
Let me see that. Can I please, while you're talking?
Sure.
I want to take a look at that picture again.
Yeah. So the residents both, you know, accepted his bullying, so to speak. And one guy that had got shot was given a real dressing down for not having the good sense to at least duck. Instead, he got shot. So anyway, medical calls took Crumbine far from home, riding horseback and by buggy. He covered thousands of miles, many times turning the horse loose just to find his way home. So he just fell asleep, and the horse obviously knew how to get him back home. Anyway, at one time, there was no dentist to serve Dodge City, so Doc naturally substituted when it was possible. The story's told that one day a young cowboy came in with a terrible toothache after much prying and pulling and probably a lot of pain. A tooth was extracted. However, it was the wrong tooth. Now, after kind of lambasting the doctor from the patient, Doc proceeded to replace the tooth. And as far as is known, it was a successful replant of the tooth back in the guy's head.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Now, Dr. Crumbine's first venture into the field of public health was, strangely enough, a campaign for the eradication of alcoholism among babies. There were literally hundreds of patent medicines on sale, which were advertised to relieve pain and prevent babies from crying.
Mm.
They also professed to cure everything from dandruff to ingrown toenails and could be purchased for about 10 cents to a dollar for a bottle of this miracle cure.
Ah, yes.
Now, as far as the baby was concerned, this was not false advertising. You see, the crying stopped because the baby was happily drunk after a few tablespoons of the stuff. Okay, most of these curatives...
Mama.
Can I have some more? You know, most of these curatives and excelsiors were 50% alcohol.
Oh, my goodness.
And in most snake bite cases Crumbine treated, he had to treat the patient for acute alcohol consumption as well.
Holy smokes.
Because, you know, once you got bit by a snake, you wanted to have something to dull
after
the pain.
After you had a couple of those shots, you needed to look for some more snakes.
Yeah. Now, his second endeavor after the baby thing in bettering public health was in conjunction with restaurants. And there was a guy named Fred Harvey who had a restaurant. And Crumbine had noted that milk was dispensed to the patrons from a pitcher. And he felt this was a health hazard. So he approached Harvey, the restaurant guy, and it was concluded that all milk at the Harvey houses would be served in sealed bottles. And it's believed that this was the first use of a container like that in a restaurant. And so it was just
really—it
was just healthier.
I wonder how clean those restaurants were.
Well, and that's the question. You know, they just served milk in a pitcher. And obviously just came in from being milked.
Or, but what about the food itself?
You know, I think they soon learned which places to go and not go.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
So anyway, an exhaustive campaign was launched, directed especially at patent medicines. A bulletin was issued regularly to keep the public informed of the findings. The first tested was a shaker neurogen, they called it, and it was guaranteed as an absolute cure for all nervous troubles. And it was found to be very effective because it was 75% alcohol.
Here we go again.
And contained nothing else of benefit.
Can't get out of the chair.
Yeah. A number of formerly nervous individuals who were interviewed admitted consuming at least a bottle a day. So another one, Cook's Gold Bond Oil, claimed to cure 18 diseases, was found to be basically turpentine.
Ooh.
And could have been doubled as a paint thinner.
Oh.
Another one, Burke's White...
It didn't kill him?
Well, I guess not.
Oh.
Burke's White Pine Balsam was a cure for chest diseases, relied heavily on chloroform to give it strength. So, you know, once you passed out, I guess you didn't feel much.
Yeah.
Now, a number of foods manufactured outside Kansas also kind of came under close scrutiny. A well-known...
You make any word up you want to.
A well-known brand of ginger snaps made in Chicago was found to contain straw, splinters of wood, and hair. One brand of pepper turned out to be 90% ground-up olive pits. It wasn't even pepper. It was ground-up olive pits.
Olive pits? I've never heard of that.
But it looked black. You know, it looked like pepper.
Uh-huh.
Now, Dr. Crumbine's first worldwide project was begun in 1905 with a crusade against the fly.
Against the...
The fly.
Like You'll, in...
The fly.
Uh-huh.
F-L-Y. You'll see what I mean.
Okay.
So, anyway, through observation, Crumbine suspected there was a direct relationship between the fly and typhoid fever.
Hmm.
And he was determined to put an end to the pest, but his campaign was kind of having a hard time getting off the ground. So one day he was at a baseball game, and someone yelled, "Sacrifice fly." Somebody else yelled, "Swat that ball." And somebody else said, "Swat that fly." Okay, you might see where this is going. A few days later, Frank H. Rose presented the doctor with a crude contraption made of a yardstick and a piece of screen wire.
Oh.
Why not call it a fly swatter?
There we go.
And the fly swatter became a household necessity all over the world.
I'm going to stop you and ask you right there, as a doctor yourself, and you've studied a lot of this kind of stuff, in the old days of the West, like Dodge City or wherever, what about all the outhouses that were right behind the businesses of the town and the typhoid problems and everything? That had, yeah. On the water supply? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, and... You know, at one time, Yellowstone River was actually the worst polluted river in the whole West.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, if you had a dead calf or whatever or sour milk, you just poured it in the river.
Oh.
And it was one of the worst polluted rivers in the West
at one time. I
didn't know that.
Didn't know that.
Of course, you know, with time, they've cleaned everything up. And
well, one would hope.
Yeah, but the other thing you just mentioned about the outhouses, but... Consider the ranch houses, too, that were right next to the barns and the corrals and, you know, the manure, the flies, everything. And again, dead animals that were maybe just pulled out of the corral. So, yeah, flies were a huge problem.
It's surprising they didn't have more problems.
Right. And, you know, they didn't have screen doors. And so flies were in the house just as much as they were out in the barn.
Yeah, really.
And landing on your food and one thing or another. But once the flies were in their place, because, you know, people started getting fly swatters, tuberculosis was next on his list to eradicate. So Crumbine was riding on a train one day, and he watched a couple of, and I'd never heard this term before, a couple of, quote, lungers, okay, guys that had tuberculosis, as they were then known. And he was kind of at a loss as to what to do next. Well, while watching these two men, one of them got up and walked to the end of the car, in this train car, and he used the drinking cup which hung by the water dispenser.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Shortly after, a little girl proceeded to walk up and do likewise and drink out of this same cup.
Yeah.
So he immediately jumped up, ran down the aisle, and he said, "Darn the common drinking cup."
Darn.
He said, "Darn."
Now, that was exactly the word he used.
Exactly the word he used. Darn the common drinking cup.
Darn.
And he threw the offending article out the window. Threw it out. Now, in 1909, the public drinking cup was outlawed. The next obstacle was how to dispense water to a thirsty public. So there was a guy by the name of Hugh Moore. He was born in Kansas, living in Boston, and he came up with an answer. It was as simple as the fly swatter, a small cone-shaped paper cup, okay, a disposable paper cup. Moore, in later years, became chairman of the board of the Dixie Cup Company.
Well, there it was, hanging Dixie out. Dixie Cup. I just saw it coming right there.
You did not. You had to wait for the punchline.
I kind of, yeah.
Okay, so Dr. Crumbine, what a guy. You know, he had to start a new campaign against tuberculosis with the slogan, which I started off with, quote, "Don't spit on the sidewalk."
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
And with the help of a local brickmaker, he put the campaign directly in the public eye. He had the slogan imprinted on sidewalk bricks that they had in the sidewalks. And soon brick manufacturers all over eastern Kansas cooperated in this new campaign. And so
how many of the frontier towns like that had bricks for sidewalks, though?
That's a good question, and I'm going to guess probably most didn't, you know, until they got further
that
west.
That one didn't in the picture.
No, not until, you know, probably, well, as I said, this was clear up in 1909 by now.
Oh, okay.
So by now, yeah, there were probably a lot of sidewalks. That
did they go like, brick. Don't spit on the sidewalk on one brick, or did they go, don't walk a couple, spit?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer. I'm going to guess it was all on one brick, but they were scattered along the whole sidewalk, you know.
Right.
But as the reported cases of this disease fell off in Kansas, other areas tried to keep up with every new public health recommendation that Dr. Crumbine made. He really was kind of ahead of his time.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, his fame spread, and much of his time was spent with a lot of the national and international health meetings that he was asked to attend, because he had ideas that, you know, which were always kind of looked at with doubt, you know, like even back in the days when it was considered the doctor should wash their hands after they'd been down cutting up a corpse in anatomy, and then they'd go up and deliver a baby up on the third floor of a hospital.
Oh, my, yeah.
And as soon as they started watching out for that, the mortality of baby deaths dropped considerably.
We've got a caller with a question. Quickly, we're almost out of time. Go ahead, caller.
Not a question, it's advice and things that I can remember when I was a kid. We hauled bricks to Wichita and places like that, and from Humboldt and Buffalo, they had on the paving bricks, "Do not spit on the sidewalk."
Really?
Well, good. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you.
They were 4-inch bricks, so they were good, heavy bricks.
Oh, my goodness, Doc. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. I knew somebody like Doc would call in. That's really good. I appreciate that.
Yeah. But, you know, in 1911, he accepted the office of Dean of the School of Medicine at the University of Kansas for 4 years. This gave him an opportunity to kind of train the young doctors who were, you know, make sure they were getting the proper training.
Yeah.
But he undertook a nationwide drive for the safe milk pasteurization of milk, which, you know.
Did he garner the information or trigger the idea about the public drinking cup and all that? I wonder where that came into his head.
You know, just like I say, he was watching people drink out of the same cup and had to think, you know, that can't be good.
That's not good.
You know. But anyway, he published his autobiography in 1948 under the name of The Frontier Doctor. And 8 years later, on July 10th, 1954, Dr. Crumbine died at the age of 91.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.